Welcome to Job Tales, the show where we find out about various professions from around the world. Each week I speak to a new guest with a very interesting job. I'm Laura Leoncini and today my guest is Claire Morris. Claire is a sound healer. Today we will learn about working with sound frequencies and how they resonate with our body. We'll learn about homeostasis and the difference between sound healing and sound therapy. Also, can you make a living as a sound healer? Here's Claire. Claire, thank you for being my guest. Amazing title that I have seen on your profile. Sound healer. So what does your present job consist of?
It's basically working with sound frequency. So It's the acknowledgement that the resonance of frequency with our nervous system and our body as a whole has an effect. So it's learning how to tune into different sounds and vibrations to have that healing effect. The best way I can describe it is if I was an artist painting a painting, it's as if each brush stroke has a different paint on it, and that paint has a different vibration and frequency, and I'm bringing it all together for you to have a full body, mind, body, spirit experience, because that's what sound is able to do as a resonant frequency.
So what kind of effect has a frequency on our body?
It can have any effect in relation to its resonance with our body. So for instance, and that is unique to a person, but for most part, there are similarities. So for instance, you know, if you hear traffic, it has quite a stressful noise pollution kind of frequency. If I hear flowing water, it has a very soothing homeostatic kind of frequency. And homeostasis is essentially the space where our nervous system comes into neutrality. And it's the space that we seek in our savasana at the end of our yoga practice. It's the space where we go into when we're in total peace and stillness in our meditation. It's that space of totality. Well, the universe and the earth resonates and meets at that frequency. It's a shared frequency. And so you can gauge it like that in relation to your question of what effect does sound frequency have on the body. Well, it depends on the sound and essentially the hertz of that frequency and how we resonate with that.
Okay, so is your practice very individual from person to person, or do you also do group sound sessions?
I do group sound sessions, and it's lovely as a group because, again, I like to use metaphors because the work that I do is very intuitive.
Yes, yeah, it's true.
So it's really the best way to describe it because it's an experience, it's a feeling. The road isn't always a straight one. So, you know, in a group space, you're actually dealing with multiple nervous systems, which means you have multiple color palettes to work with, to tune into, to resonate with, to guide and to flow with the sound and the music. Whereas one-on-one, you can go tremendously deep with a person and you need to be ready to hold space for that person where they're able to meet you in that depth, because not everyone is really able to meet you in that depth. Mm-hmm. So you really have to hold a space of safety for someone, and you really need to be able to meet them where they're at and move with them so subtly and slowly that by the time they get to that healing point of true alignment and resonance, you know, you've gone at their pace and you've met them at their depth, that they're really able to rise up into the occasion of embodying who they truly are inside. Which is important also in relation to a group, to really truly be able to tune into the group. Because if you are egoic about it, it can be quite a disorientating experience. You know, I'm going to really go out there with this one and say, if you can relate it to lovemaking or to dancing with someone, let's say you're dancing with someone, if someone kind of grabs you by the wrist and starts moving quite vigorously with you, you're going to feel like very unseen, very strange, very kind of pulled into something. Whereas when you have someone who's really come to be truly present with you, and I think being present is one of the greatest gifts we can give. You know, it's, you know, I can say, oh, it's the sound healing, or it's the yoga, or it's the meditation, but at the end of the day, it's the presence. And these are all the different ways in how we get there, how to be really present with ourselves, with our body, really sensing into where we're at. And so that's what I do with an individual and also with a group. Because if I don't come in with that full, subtle body presence, then it's felt in the frequency of the space, because our nervous systems are also resonating with each other. So it's like if you're sitting in a room with some people and, you know, it's all quite calm, and someone suddenly comes into the room and they come in with this high energy or this whirlwind energy or this stress frantic energy, it actually fills the entire room.
I see what you mean.
When you have people lying on their mats, surrendering, essentially surrendering to you, one needs to be very humble and respectful and mindful with that.
So there must be a high level of confidence. I mean, like they have to confide in you. They have to trust you and to, in bringing you that process and then the to get to the healing stage, right?
Exactly. And that's why trust building is so important. So when everyone, when the people arrive, let's say in a group situation into the session, I don't just go straight into the sound journey, because also they've arrived carrying almost the noise pollution within their own resonant bodies. You know, they've arrived with that stress or with the things they had to do in the day or with the conversation they just had with someone who was niggling at them. And so for them to meet me in that space of homeostasis, peace, neutrality, stillness, so we can really drop in, I first take people through a series of practices before we even get to the sound. And those practices will be things like breath work, setting intentions, lighting candles, you know, kind of really landing and arriving in the space for us to drop into a deeper space together as a group. And then from there, I gently and slowly take them into the journey. And even in there with the sound, you know, you start incrementally with little bits and then you slowly build it up so that each sound experience is like a different chapter for you to experience different parts of yourself, opening you up more and more and more until you have completely disappeared. But you've disappeared, but you're still totally present. You're just in the subconscious mind. You're just more present with your subconscious mind as an actual space.
It's fascinating. Yeah, because it is very very specific, and you also need to know that there is something such as sound healing. So, you know, because if I want to heal from something, I immediately think of something tangible. You know, I go to the doctor, or if it's mental, I go to the psychotherapist and so forth. But sound healing, what's the approach to that? And how do you actually get customers?
So, like, you know, what's interesting is that it's a resonance for people. And I love how the word resonance comes up again, because people usually come because they feel an attraction or they feel a calling or it's something that speaks to them. You know, it might be someone who's never tried it, or it's someone who has simply identified that we all take to different things and they particularly take to sound and music. And what's interesting is that it can be a tangible thing, because with it's called somatics. So the somatics of sounds are the vibrations, and those vibrations land in your body in a particular way that it has that physical effect. And that physical effect also allows for an opening of that emotional effect. They actually work hand in hand. And, you know, with that, if I speak to something like mantras, with the Indian mantras, those are essentially affirmations that they're saying over and over again in Sanskrit. So Loka, Samasta, Sukhino, Bhavantu, that's a mantra that you'll sing over and over again. But what it's saying is, may all beings be happy and free. So if I'm saying may all beings be happy and free over and over again, and I'm singing that to myself, what I'm doing is I'm actually tuning into the resonance of that frequency of the intention of that affirmation. And by singing it, I have to relax my body, my breath changes. I have total buy-in from my mind, body, and spirit to the point that I end up actually embodying that frequency. And by the end of it, I feel at peace. I feel open. My heart is open. And to add to that, what also happens is that when you, there's a lot of neuro-linguistic programming that actually happens with sound healing. So for instance, if you have an idea or a belief in your head that you're continuously telling yourself, you're telling your brain to run through those neural pathways. And so you are establishing and reinforcing those neural pathways that that is where the energy flows in how you're thinking. Hmm. The same with negative beliefs. You're reinstalling, reinforcing those negative beliefs. But the thing is as soon as you pull away from certain things or you tell yourself, I'm not going to think like that. It's called psychological safety. You no longer allow these things into your mind and your well-being, then those neural pathways start to die off and erode off. They start to cut off because your brain's no longer using them. So, And it's the same when you think about, you know, if you watch a movie, imagine watching a movie with no music, but you have a completely different emotive response to the whole thing.
Yeah,
exactly. It actually filters music. Music filters your experience wherever you are, even if you out, you know, on the promenade or in the heart, wherever you find yourself to be, if there's music in the background, it will filter your experience. So there's a lot to be said about it and the different ways you can use it.
Also, what kind of sounds are we talking about?
So the sounds that I work with are very traditional and ancient instruments. So I will work with Tibetan singing bowls. And those are made out of a series of metals that the Tibetans actually believed are in alignment and in tune with the different minerals that you'll find in the cosmos. So while you are singing and resonating with this Tibetan bowl, you're also resonating with the different elements in the cosmos. And then I also use crystal singing bowls. I really love that for toning because I can reach very high tones with that, very angelic frequencies. And I also use the gong that has very kind of deep, spacey kind of sounds. And then I'll also use chimes. I'll also use the guitar. With the guitar, I tune more into kind of indie folk medicine kind of singing. But for the most part, I would say the main instrument that I use is my voice. And those different instruments are really invitations that I can bounce off of and springboard off of to then come into using my voice as an instrument. And I'm very excited with my voice because what I've found is that, you know, if you think of a ventriloquist or someone whose profession is to do different voiceovers for different things, it's actually, our voice is actually so multi-diverse. You know, you can go into an array of different spaces and those different spaces will be transmitted. Those different frequencies, those different intentions, those different messages are all transmitted through the voice and felt in the body.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing with my voice is that I actually found it in lockdown because I was like, I can't travel. I'm a huge fan of traveling and exploring very intrepid spaces. And I didn't have that. So I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm sitting here with my voice. So that
it's hard to do something.
Yeah, so that was a good
yeah name. But we were talking about before the interview, we were talking about therapy and healing, and then you told me that you're not a therapist, you're not a sound therapist, you're a sound healer. What is the difference? And also in terms of, you know, certificate or something that allows you to do this job, if there's any.
That's a very clear distinction. So, you know, there's a whole field of coaches and healers and practitioners, somatic practitioners, that are tremendously gifted people, tremendously gifted and very experienced and very well practiced and mature and all these things. And, you know, a lot of those courses are very valid courses. So you have an array of certificates that people can show you saying, I've been through this initiation and that course. But the thing is that might not necessarily be recognized by medical practitioners, yeah. You know, and the medical practitioners are people who've gone through institutions and universities where, in order to refer their clients to people, they need to have you registered in a particular way to share in those medical faculties. So basically, my best advice then is for someone who wants to be able to work very closely with medical practitioners, like also like psychiatrists, psychologists, it's a lot easier for people to refer their clients to you if you have a medical registration number.
Okay.
Yeah, and that comes by doing your honors and your master's in psychology. So what I would say is, if you want to be a sound therapist or an art therapist, then you actually need to go and complete your psychology course first and then do their art therapy course or sound therapy course on top of that, okay. Which could be a number, it could be 3 more years, it could be 1, 2, or 3 more years. But what's really nice is that, you know, the thing is when I studied psychology, I was quite happy with my BA. And I genuinely thought that I was a registered counselor after that. But then when I went back to check it out, they said, no, you actually need to have your honors to be a counselor and you need to have your master's to be a practicing psychologist, because I was very keen to become, you know, a sound therapist that medical practitioners can refer people to me. But in the end, what I find is that when people see your work and they genuinely admire and respect what you do and they can see the benefit of it, they'll probably end up collaborating with you then. So it's not the end of the road. It's just a different road. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so your background is art. You were saying that you did the Bachelor of Art. Is that right?
So a Bachelor of Arts is more kind of like a general degree. Okay. And I did that degree in psychology. So I studied for 3 years in psychology, and I also did a degree in social development, which includes knowledge on society, politics, economics, how that all works together towards governance and community development. And then from there, I took that into a postgraduate diploma in sustainable development.
Okay.
And with that, I am an active artist. I think my true self, my true nature is to be an artist. And so I take that approach into whatever I do, which is why I love the sound healing so much, because it's actually like a combination of the art and the psychology for me, because I'm very attracted to the transformative aspect of it. People being able to step into an artistic experience and be transformed by it out on the other side.
Yeah,
makes it exciting for me.
And what kind of art do you practice? Like, what's your art?
So I would say the sound in and of itself is my art, because like how I started saying that, you know, when you're working with sound, it's like working with an array of different paints, different textures, different colors, and it becomes a moving artistic experience. I also love performance art. I'm very theatrical. Yes. And recently, I took great joy in making these kind of antelope puppet lanterns, these antelope heads, these white antelope heads that light up, and then doing kind of like dance, contemporary dance pieces with that. So I'm also, I'm like naturally inclined to be an art therapist. I do love it. Like even in school, all of my artworks, you know, we were always asked what the outcome was, but I would always so enjoy the process. It was always about the process for me to get to whatever that outcome was.
Okay, that's nice.
But then the other art that I do is photography and minimalist sketching. Yeah, so I've got a lot of art going.
So would you say is that what takes most of your time today, and what do you of course you need to earn a living in life, are you able to do so with the sound healing job?
I would say if it was my full focus, I would, but I would say they're very you have to be smart. You have to be smart about the channels that you choose. You need stability with a studio, or you need, you know, regular clients who are trusting in the program with you, or you need to be as a freelancer, you need to be involved in curating private groups, or I want to say have kind of elitist clients, mm-hmm. or be able to have a strong following. So, you know, if you put out a sound journey that you know a certain amount of people will come because they love to regularly come, and then they also love to bring their friends and they want to share that experience with others. There's also the opportunity to go and share your craft at retreats, or now it's very popular to have these kinds of things at festivals. So basically, I would say if your choice is to be a sound healer, you also need to understand that you need to be a content creator and an entrepreneur, because you need to hold a community to maintain that consistent flow of income. And also, like I would say, any somatic practitioner or any artist, you know, sometimes there's quite a strong flow of currency coming your way. And, you know, maybe you come into alignment with international clients, maybe you get booked for a series of retreats. And the more networks you make, you know, it's almost like that the stronger that flow becomes and the brighter that platform becomes that you've created for yourself. But then it's also important to take a break, because, yeah. you know, anything that you do full time, because also if you're an entrepreneur, you're thinking about it all the time. You wake up with it, you go to bed with it. You need to be able to take that time to replenish yourself, and also to take time away from it so you can grow. Because at some point, it's not authentic for you anymore as a creative art. And if it's not authentic for you anymore, then it starts that high frequency that you hold starts to die off. So you always need to reestablish that your relationship with it. And so then obviously in that time, maybe the flow of currency coming your way is a bit less. Whereas maybe if you partner or collaborate with a retreat and they invite you to come into the space that they're governing, then, you know, then that's lovely, because then you can have a consistent flow of clients and income like that. But you need to be able to get out there and to build those relationships, which is why a lot of people may also like to do the sound healing, but maybe that's 25% of their focus, or 30% or 50% or 80%, not quite so 100%, but there's something else of interest that they're doing.
And to, yeah, and then you do something else.
Themselves, which right. is also the same. It's quite common. It's also the same. I've met a lot of musicians who are mostly producers, or they'll find ways to create music that they can sell online as sound bites and things like that. Like, most creative people I know have to be pretty diverse with their content to sustain themselves.
Yeah, no, for sure. And so what would be your advice to a young crowd listening today, young men and young women, you know, they, how to start, like what would be a good beginning? And also, would it be the same in any country, or are there some countries that are more receptive to this practice?
Yeah, I would say there are some countries where economically people are more able to have excess cash, that they're able to, you know, have those self-care practices. I would also say there's some countries that are more open to it than others, depending on what the cultural background might be. And also, I would say in some countries, it's more of the social norm to show up and arrive and attend, whereas in other countries, it might be more the social norm to only decide if they're going to come last minute or not, you know? So there's like a fluctuation depending on where you are. There's either like a nice consistency of I know what I'm going to get, or there might be a sensation of it's always touch and go. You never know what you're going to get, but you love what you do, so you keep going for it. And anyone wanting to get in this field, I would say just go for it, because, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you were kind of, for the large part, it was very unconventional and not respected. But right. now it is really respected, and it's very popular, and it's very seen, and people are seeking it more. And now you can go as what I do. You can go and work with body corporates. You can go to hospitals just as being invited in as a sort of patient enrichment experience kind of thing. People want it. People really want it now. So the best advice that I could say is, if it's calling to you, then do it. Because I didn't think that I was going to be doing this. It happened for me during lockdown.
It's also like the more classic institutions are embracing this now, like you were saying, the hospitals and so.
Yeah, because they can see the benefit. And if you look back to the ancient traditions of the Tibetans and the Nepalese and whoever else avidly work with sound, you know, the knowledge and practice has been there for thousands of years, but it was just almost like a drop in time where suddenly it didn't quite work with the educational practices that we've been enrolled into. And those are beginning to open up again, and we're beginning to really see the benefits. And, you know, it was really, stepping into this was really a calling for me. And I listened to it and I kept moving with it and I kept opening it up and I kept trusting with it and I kept working on it and I kept saying yes to it. And then what I can say is that in terms of financial revenue, it's been the strongest area that I've received money from in all of the different work that I've done throughout the years. So I
so
think
it pays
with
off
anything,
as well.
You put your mind to it and you give good quality, if you make sure that your work is good quality and you put your all of yourself into it, people read on that immediately, and they want to resonate with that. They want that in their space. And so it will work for you. You will be successful.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Claire, for sharing your experience and your life path. I wish you all the best for the remaining of, you know, many decades more of sound healing.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much. Yeah, and I appreciate this call with you and to be able to share my passion. It's always a tremendous gift. So
awesome.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Pleasure is mine.
This was Claire Morris, sound healer. You will find more episodes on Spotify, Google Podcast, and Apple Podcast, as well as any of your favorite players. I'm always looking for new guests, so please send me ideas on jobtalespodcast@gmail.com. Otherwise, see you next week for a new episode of Job Tales.